Do you guys want to know what my all-time favorite word in the English language is?
Well, it's not broadcast, it's podcast. You could probably say it.
It is a PG word, and I'll give you a hint. It has something to do with our campfire conversation.
Is it thrice?
No.
Oh, that's mine.
Solid. Is that your favorite word?
Yeah. Sorry, thrice. I didn't mean to detract. Please tell me about yours.
Campfire conversation. Yeah, that's also
what I was wondering.
I was only just thinking about my favorite word. But no, I'm interested. Please tell me yours.
Well, you have to guess. It has to do with our campfire conversation.
I think I might know. Is it spelunking?
Yes.
Ooh,
nice
guess, Audio Dave.
Yeah. First thrice, then spelunking. Those are very different guesses, but you did get it.
I got there eventually.
Wow.
Will you tell us what spelunking is?
It means to go explore caves. Or caving is another synonym for spelunking, I believe. You can say, I'm going to go caving.
Way less fun to say caving.
Yeah,
it's a great word. Let's go spelunking today. I actually am very excited. I think I say that every show because we come up with the best topics ever. But I do think this is a really fun topic, one that is genuinely not known by them. I think everyone could probably name at least one or two caves in this state. But beyond that, I think it's tough for people to come up with some great caves worth exploring in Wisconsin. There are a few. So
that's true. And for this one, we do literally have to go underground.
Yes, we do. Mm. Let's go spelunking.
I'm never going to stop loving that little sound bite. What do we call it? The sting, Audio Dave?
The sting, yes, indeed.
The Cabin is presented by the Wisconsin Counties Association, and this week we're featuring, where I live, Milwaukee County. It's, of course, the most populous county in Wisconsin. Nearly a million residents. It's the 45th most populous county in the United States.
Wow.
Home to many landmarks, most of them in the city, but not all of them. Everything from the internationally famous Milwaukee Art Museum, the wonderful Milwaukee County Zoo, and Frank Lloyd Wright Architecture, Miller Park, downtown and the lakefront, of course. A very diverse county, too. It's got the city of Milwaukee, but there's 19 municipalities total, 10 of them cities and 9 of them villages. And also a couple of neat inventions, including the typewriter, which was invented in Milwaukee. What? In fact, right where the Milwaukee Arena stands today is where Christopher Latham Sholes first invented the practical typewriter in 1867. So if you ever text, you can thank a Milwaukeean.
For the listener, I hope you know that Eric just came up with that off the top of his head. That's not on the note sheet, and I'm impressed.
Honestly, it doesn't matter how much I prep, Eric will, you know, add to it either way. It's usually positive off script.
Usually, yes.
I did want to note, though, that the facts you outlined, Ellen, I thought were especially interesting. You have to talk about the soccer one.
There was one I did not know that Ellen provided, and that is that the Milwaukee Wave is the oldest soccer team in the U.S., I'm assuming in its league, in its category, correct? Or there was soccer team ever before the Wave?
So I researched, question mark. But I didn't do a deep dive. So let's just leave it with the one sentence I put there.
Well, the Milwaukee Wave, great soccer team, many championships in the last couple of decades, and they're a lot of fun to go. And I'm looking forward to when those games are available again.
Awesome. Well, great, thank you, facts. Counties Association.
All right, time for
now,
this
Mariah.
Week's.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Mariah.
God, I had just one job here. I was about to introduce the next.
I know. I was trying conversation. I was trying for a transition here.
Well, what you got? Sorry. Let's hear it. Better
you've
be
done
good.
So well.
To my knowledge,
this has been the best transition.
To my knowledge, there are no caves in Milwaukee County. So I don't know about going spelunking in Milwaukee County, although there's a lot of old buildings you can dive down into.
Okay, well, I wanted to use Ellen's transition because on here she said, time for this week's campfire conversation. This one is really cool. No pun intended. I don't know if you meant the pun there, but I just made it a pun.
It works.
Eric, what are the odds that people are going to want to step outside of their quarantined quarters to go climb inside a cave post quarantine? I was just laughing and I was saying, oh, we're giving people all these tips. I'm like, is that like the last thing they're going to want to do? Like, aren't people going to want to go like in the most wide open spaces ever? Maybe not.
Can't wait to get out my front door and get in a confined space again.
Exactly.
That's true. Now, if you're the only one in the cave, you're nobody else is going to be around you, right?
That's true. I can't so guarantee either, that will be the case.
Well, that's the thing. It's there is no in between. There's one or the other. You're either practicing the ultimate social distancing by being in a cave and no one else is around you.
Right.
Or it's the ultimate. It's nobody can be more than 6 feet from you because a cave is generally a relatively tight confined space.
Yes. Yeah. Well, okay. Regardless, these are some really great, interesting, fun, awesome caves in Wisconsin. I actually learned a few things as I was researching for this campfire conversation. So, Eric, I'm going to let you start us off. Which cave do you want to enlighten us with?
Well, Mariah, I think you should start with the one fact that I totally didn't know about caves in this state.
If I knew what that fact was,
it's right there.
Eric, did you know there are more than 400 documented caves in Wisconsin? I also didn't know that. That's crazy.
Why, yes, Mariah, I did not know that, and I'm glad I know now. And
you're
I wish I knew of more of them then. I got to do a little more research when we're done.
So obviously, the vast majority of those have got to be on, I would think, private property. I mean, probably. 400 is, that's a crazy amount. And I also was wondering, because there's, what are the caverns? Is that what they're called? The piece like in the rock. So a couple of the destinations I have on my list are kind of more caverns, less caves. So I did wonder if that 400 number, if that was true caves or, again, Alan's like, did basic research here. I'm not going to take it.
What is the difference between a cavern and cave?
Probably size and access level. The cavern was a popular club the Beatles played before they really got big.
Well, cavern, it says the definition is a cave or a chamber in a cave, typically a large one. But what's interesting, though, is when you look at the pictures, there are a lot of, well, not all of them, but many of them are like water. So like, for example, I don't want to give too much away, but there's some parks coming up that you can kayak through, and they tend to call some of those caverns that you kayak into, but based on straight up Google search, it doesn't look like there's much of a difference between a cavern and a cave.
I'm guessing size and level of access in and out, ingress and egress, as they like to say sometimes. So let's go over a couple of these, like some for instances, if you will.
Yeah.
And I'll go ahead and start with Crystal Cave. Now, a lot of these caves, I'm assuming, but you know what happens when you assume, are in the Driftless area where there's a lot more topography and therefore a lot more opportunity for caves. Crystal Cave is west of Menominee along Highway 29, St. Croix, Dunn County border area. And it is really cool. It's one of the largest in the state, very popular with tourists, and you can get guided tours through that cave. And it's just in such a beautiful area. It's definitely a fun little weekend jaunt.
I haven't been.
It is.
I would like to go.
I went. It was a long time ago when I went. It was about 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's all kinds of cool stuff you can see in these caves, just like with all of them. But they give you all the history because early settlers used those caves for a lot of things.
Yeah. So fascinating. Okay, so I want to talk about the cave tours at Ledgeview Nature Center in Chilton. So here you can get a naturalist-led tour of the cave systems, including Carolyn's Caverns. There's that word again. Well, where you'll learn cave geology, biology, and human history. So you should definitely expect some stairs and ladders that do involve crawling. So wear, you know, layers, old clothes, pants, long sleeves, basically plan on getting dirty. Note, though, that there are optional opportunities for crawling. So I think it's fairly accessible for folks who don't want to crawl. Reservations are required. Flashlights are helpful. And many of these caves are very family friendly, which I love. This actually surprised me, but there are quite a few that recommended minimum age is 5 years old, which is awesome. I wouldn't have guessed that. And this one is also a minimum age of 5. So like I said, pretty family friendly, which is really exciting.
See, what's interesting is that one's not in the Driftless area, but where Chilton is, that's kind of the beginning of the Niagara Escarpment.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, if you've ever been to, you know, High Cliff State Park, which is kind of over in that area, it's really gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And the first time I went to High Cliff, I mean, the name obviously suggests it, but I remember being very taken aback in a great way in terms of just how much topography there is in that area. You don't really think about that pocket of Wisconsin as being interesting in terms of geology, but it definitely is. It's a really fascinating topography there. And I had forgotten that the Chilton Cave is one of the more, and the other cool thing is that destination is pretty easy to get to. I mean, it's between Green Bay. Green Bay can get to it pretty easily. Milwaukee folks can get up to it pretty easily. So really great spot.
Right off highways 3257 and US 151. If you want me to pull up my
audio on that. We need a drop
for that.
We do.
Maybe with all my free time, I'll work on that.
Should I call it a hidden gem?
I think the audio for your road thing, can it be like traffic noises or just car whizzing by or something?
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, let's workshop it.
A car peeling out. We'll figure it out.
I wish I was good at making my own. I would just do it every time you did that, but that would be
I'm sure I have a sound effect of that laying around from all my radio stuff.
Who knows? Maybe by the time this drops, I'll have figured it out and one will be placed here.
Oh.
Ooh, post-production. I love it.
No promises.
Yeah. You know, let's get the largest one mentioned because I think when a lot of people think about caves in Wisconsin, the one they think about the most is the one they see the most advertising signs for along the roads, and that's Cave of the Mounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very large cave system, very popular. Lots of tours go through there. Some of the caves are narrow, but a lot of them are huge and well-lit, relatively speaking, right there by Blue Mound in southern Wisconsin. It's basically about the Dane, Iowa County line, just off 18 and 151. Real easy to get to, and there's always a lot going on there. That's a bit, most caves are kind of out of the way, and they're quiet most of the time. Cave of the Mounds almost always has something going on, it seems.
They do, and their events are so fun. We actually featured Cave of the Mounds in our 10 Reasons to Love the Madison Area episode, which you can go stream right now on YouTube. I think the cave is in segment 3 of the show. Segment 3. And I loved that part of the episode because, I mean, Cave of the Mounds is the ultimate field trip. At least those of us who grew up in the Madison area, we all went to Cave of the Mounds at least once or twice as a kid. And it was great. But I think what's fun is they've really done an amazing job of catering to adults also. So for the Madison show, we went there when they had, I don't remember if it was bluegrass, but there was some kind of really fun music. Actually, they had music up in the barn. There's a barn up kind of on this hill above the cave. And then they also had live music in the cave itself. That was more like acoustic because, of course, when you're in a cave, the sound design, and obviously, Dave, you could probably speak a little bit more to that than I can. But
yes.
Man, it was tricky to capture sound down there from a production standpoint. But when you're there in person to tour it, just having one guy and on his guitar singing acoustically, it was really fun, really awesome. And during that event, many of them, they're fun, I forget what they're called, but fun like sampling events. So everyone had a beer down in the cave, which where else can you go enjoy a
That's
beer,
awesome.
Listen to live music while you're spelunking?
Spelunking.
You know, there is another cave where you can do that. And I'll save that one for last.
All
because
right.
It's Ooh. In the county, because there is a cave in Milwaukee County.
Really?
Should I just forget about saving this for last and tell you right
just
now?
Just go on a turn.
Yeah, okay, I'll go ahead and
otherwise, I'm not going to listen to what Mariah says because I'm so excited.
That's called a tease in the broadcast biz audio day. Miller Caves at Miller Brewing Company, where Miller Coors is
in
Milwaukee.
Are we broadening
That's
the definition? Yeah.
It is a cave. It is dug into the hillside. And those caves date back to the 1850s before refrigeration. And a lot of breweries did this. So there's actually similar caves up near Leinenkugel's too in Chippewa Falls, and I'm sure in other places. They would dig caves into the hillside. They would throw sawdust over huge ice blocks that they would cut out of the lakes in the winter. And those would be the areas where they would keep beer cold for storage. And
those are man-made caves.
They're man-made caves, but they are caves nonetheless. We didn't specify man-made versus.
Caves full of beer. I mean, we're not going to be too upset about that.
And that is one place if you have to rent, you can't drink beer on the tour in the caves, but if you rent it for events, which they do, you can enjoy beer and dinner and all that stuff down there in the original caves, the old bricking and everything that's, you know, 160 or 70 years old at this point. So it's pretty cool.
What a cool, like wedding location.
Yeah.
It is popular for weddings, cool. Actually. All right. Well, let's go to an Onyx Cave next. I know we just talked about Cave of the Mounds. I'm just going to go a little bit southwest and stay in the Driftless area and mention Eagle Cave, which is right off of a county road off Highway 60. And there's just a lot of cool minerals to be found in Eagle Cave. Again, they call themselves the state's largest onyx cave. And really, Mariah, that leads to one thing. A lot of caves, you know, there's so much cool stuff that you see underground in these caves that you just don't see anywhere else.
Yeah, it's true. The one thing that's tricky is, well, we kind of talked about this because we battled this in production in terms of that Madison episode, bringing our lights down to the cave was a trick and a half. And I have warned people who want to take some great photos, that can be a tiny bit tricky, but you can get up to the stalagmites and stalactites. Which one is which? I was just trying to remember. Don't tell me. Wait.
Okay.
I don't know what the difference is. I couldn't tell you if I wanted to.
Oh, dang it. I used to know this. Audio Dave, bail me out.
Stalactites hang tightly to the ceiling. And I always think of the letter M from stalagmites looking like two of them jumping up from the ground.
Okay. Everyone has told me different ways to remember it. And I think I have so many different ways of remembering that I'm not remembering any of them. So every time, I just always talk about them collectively, stalagmites and stalactites. But then that's where my knowledge ends. Just knowing
they
the
kind of go together like kibbles and bits, don't they?
Yeah, there are a lot of conventions for remembering it that it's hard to remember which convention should work for you. Yep. I know people say, like, you might trip over stalagmites.
Yep.
I don't know. Whatever works, I guess.
Anyway, well, I just like to sound like Bill Nye by saying the words in the first place and pretending like I know what each of them
are. We're all very impressed.
Thank you so much. Okay. Well, I mean, I know Cave of the Mounds is, like you said, Eric, probably the most famous cave in Wisconsin, but I'd say if it has any competition, it'd probably be the Apostle Islands Sea Caves.
Yes.
Up in Cornucopia. Mm-hmm. Different kind of caves, but caves nonetheless. Perhaps
they're a little more seasonal.
A little more seasonal, yes. A little more diverse in, you know, you visit Cave of the Mounds is, I don't think, going to change that much in terms of the visual, whether it's January or June. But true. Obviously, the sea caves, dramatic difference between the seasons. It's probably the most photogenic cave on our list, although those are probably fighting words right there, because some people might argue otherwise. But yes. They're beautiful. Our geology here is incredible, like all of them on our list. Centuries of wave action, freezing and thawing have really sculpted the shorelines here. So if you guys are picturing what I'm talking about, that famous Apostle Islands National Lake shore is what we're referencing here. People going kayaking in and out of the sea caves. They really are some of the Great Lakes' most spectacular scenery here. So think delicate arches, vaulted chambers, honeycomb passageways. They're really along the north shore of Devil's Island, Swallow Point on Sand Island, and along the mainland near the lakeshore's western boundary. So quite expansive, actually. I don't know if you're allowed to kayak through that entire section or not, but I mean, obviously you can get guided trips by going up to the Cornucopia area.
Yeah, a lot of people kayak around it. I'm not sure there's probably rules about going in.
I know, I feel like I've seen people go, well, I don't want to say that because... Definitely, I would look into it and get a guided trip if you can. And I don't want to be like a Debbie Downer, but a little word to the wise. Don't take on the kayaking on Lake Superior if you're not even like a somewhat experienced kayaker. It is a scary, I don't want to say it's a scary lake, but it's a big lake and Lake Superior can get nasty quickly. So I know it's Apostle Islands has been almost a little bit probably over promoted over the last few years. And I know there's been some folks who've gotten into some pretty scary situations up there. So word of the wise, just be a little careful, wear your life jacket.
And you don't have to be kayaking to see them either. No. Like you can take the walking trails. That's what we did last fall.
Yep.
We took this great hiking trail and saw a bunch of them on the shoreline.
Boat tours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and those are advisable. I mean, kayaking can be cool, but Lake Superior is usually about 40 degree water all year round.
Mm-hmm.
And it can get rough enough where Gordon Lightfoot wrote a song about it, swallowing a massive freighter. So, yes.
Yeah.
Be an experienced kayaker with lots of, with a really good life jacket if you're going to kayak the waters of Lake Superior. But that doesn't mean you can't enjoy the caves.
Exactly. Yeah. Like Dave said, there are other ways to enjoy them if you're not into kayaking or a little maybe intimidated by attempting to kayak through them. And then I think we've talked about this in other shows that you can visit that. Well, sometimes you can visit them in the winter. I think the last time they were officially open was around 2014. So it's a very, you know, the decision on whether the ice caves are open is definitely dependent on safety, because when they do open, they tend to get swarmed by the masses. So that's another kind of just something to note if you're going to try to see them.
And it takes prolonged cold weather, and even the smallest warm spell can mess it up. So yeah,
yes.
it's touchy, but it's, if you get a chance to see it, it's gorgeous.
Stalactite icicles everywhere. I don't know if that's a thing, but I'm making it a thing.
I think regular icicles would qualify as that.
That's just what an icicle is. But I mean, if it's an icicle, in a cave, that's a special kind of icicle, Audio Dave.
Yeah.
All right. Dave, I like just it. Let her have it. Just let her have it.
All Dave. Right. Yep.
Scientist Mariah reporting for duty.
All right, Dr. Haberman, what's your next one?
That should be a new segment.
Oh my gosh, me with a science show would be cringeworthy. Anywho, my last one, I kind of went back and forth on this one. I'm talking about Cave Point County Park. So maybe not caves in your super traditional sense, but they are technically full of caverns. And I didn't really realize, I knew people went diving around Cave Point. I knew that was a popular mm-hmm. diving spot. But what I didn't realize is that divers, experienced divers, can get actually right into the little caverns in Cave Point County Park. So to me, that qualifies as being worthy on this list. And I think that's really awesome. Actually, I want to look up photography or some video footage of these divers, because that's got to be pretty fascinating. I think Cave Point County Park is probably maybe, yeah, no, I think it's the most popular county park in the state of Wisconsin, in large part, ooh, I think, due to those. I mean, this is just me guessing, but I know a lot of people visit Cave Point County Park, and this is something I did not know. So the view of Cave Point, which I should have mentioned, is in Sturgeon Bay in Door County. It does kind of look a little bit like the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore. I mean, you have similar rock formations. What I didn't realize, though, is that when the waves crash up against these rocks, I guess waves can get up to, or more than actually, 30 feet, which explains why, wow, I've seen some of the most stunning photography of Door County. Whenever I look and I'm like, who took that photo and where did they take it? It's almost always at Cave Point County Park. I mean, this place is so pretty. So pretty.
Capture still of the, like, yeah, the wave when the water splashes right upwards at the height of its splash. Mm-hmm. It does make for spectacular photography.
Yeah, not get your camera wet.
It's by Whitefish Dunes too. I mean, there's beautiful beaches near there, and the mm-hmm. rocks. The rocks are fun to climb on, but if you're a kayaker, if you scuba dive, you can really dive into areas that are much, you know, that landlubbers can't get into.
Landlubbers.
Does that count as spelunking when you're doing that?
Yep, it does in my book.
It's official.
Okay. It's definitely a fun one to see.
Do you know how badly I would like to do an underwater episode for Discover Wisconsin? Ooh. I don't know that you would have much of a job on. Well, you would, I think, Audio Dave. Boo and I have to subtitle our on-cams. But I want to do an underwater show. I've been pushing for it for about 7 years.
That would be really cool. See the, see the shipwrecks and everything.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
Like the Manitowoc area. Obviously, you know, the Cave Point.
You did a little bit of that in our Manitowoc episode, didn't you?
A little tiny bit, yes. But I wasn't, like, there weren't ships. I wasn't exploring. It was just, like, a quick on-cam I did for the
show. Yeah,
it
wasn't a deep sea dive or anything.
No,
but
I mean, I want to do, like, a full underwater show. So let's make it happen.
We'll use GoPros for that one.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's a couple of our favorites, but there's about 393 to 394 more caves to explore if our 400 cave statistic is right. Right, Mariah?
That's right.
And if you have a favorite cave, feel free to comment and let us know.
This episode of The Cabin is sponsored by Jolly Good Soda, putting the pop in Wisconsin. Jolly Good is a Wisconsin classic. It's
very nice.
That was a nice little pop. It's created on its own and as a mixer in cocktails. Actually, if you're a fan of Charlie Behrens, you may have noticed he posted a video recently making an old fashioned using the sour power flavor of Jolly Good, which is the only way to make an old fashioned.
Essential.
Oh, yeah, dear God,
totally
that
essential.
Was good. Oh, yeah.
They've come back in a big way over the past couple of years. So next time you're on an essential grocery run, head into Woodman's and pick up a few. Do they still? So I think when I was a kid, I remember you had those cardboard, like, little lids that you filled up your Jolly Good with. Like, they weren't really sold. Oh, and, like, yeah. Wasn't that how they were sold?
Yeah, where you could, like, create your own
all pack the flavors of them that you want. I just remember that's how we got our Jolly Good. It was, like, in, like, a little lid. It wasn't, like, and then, yeah, you mixed and matched.
Really?
I don't know how they're selling
that
them nowadays.
That might have been how it was done in 1998 at the Piggly Wiggly near my hometown. I don't know if anyone else.
The Piggly Wiggly.
So you can head to Woodman's or you can order online at jollygoodsoda.com.
So if you were listening last week, I warned you that this week's episode would be filled with dairy, like I usually am. And it certainly is, because today we're talking about this weekend's new episode, Destination Dairy. In this episode, we basically check out a number of things. It's Jack. Sorry, Mara, I was giving you a chance to pop in, but I'll hog this.
I just left you hanging.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No problem. No problem. I should cue you. We can see each other. By the way, I know we're just talking in the podcast, but we can actually see each other. We're doing this in video chat.
Yep.
I had to put pants on for this. Anyway.
Well, that was optional.
Yeah, it was. I'm not standing. Anyway. In this Destination Dairy episode, Jack and Marie check out quite a few places, including, and I'll start with this, and it's a really cool place if you haven't seen it, and it's very new, the Farm Wisconsin Discovery Center, which is right along, you can't miss it, it's right along I-43 at the St. Nazian's exit, County C in southern Manitowoc County, and it is a really cool place to go and learn about the dairy industry and really learn about a ton of stuff.
Yeah, when was this built?
It opened maybe a year and a half ago.
Yeah, okay. Because I remember we actually halted we premiered a Manitowoc show a year ago, and we actually halted our entire production just to wait for the construction on this facility to get done because we wanted to put it in the episode because it was so cool and interesting. It looks gorgeous. Beautiful building.
It's a gorgeous building. 10,000 square feet of exhibit space in there. They'll take you on a dairy farm tour. There's a birthing barn in there.
Wow.
Land O'Lakes sponsors that. And basically, it really illustrates the lives and the work of the people who are in the agriculture industry, and that's only 2% of us nowadays, but all of us consume the products that they produce. And so it's important to know what they do, where it all comes from, and to have the appreciation for it that I know, Mariah, you and I certainly have for it, and Audio Dave and Ellen, I'm assuming you too.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's one of the segments. And then we move on to the National Historic Cheesemaking Center, which is in Monroe, because Monroe is a huge center for cheese production to the point where their high school mascot is the cheesemaker.
Isn't that great?
Team, it's awesome. The Monroe Cheesemakers. You can't get more Wisconsin than that.
Well, and the Brewers, kind of Wisconsin.
That's true too. Well,
that's
good point,
true.
Mariah. So for Destination Brewery, we'll do that.
I look forward to that episode.
Yes. Actually, me too. I hope I'm in that one. So at the National Historic Cheesemaking Center, it's actually in one of the old railroad depots in Monroe. It's on the west side of town along Highway 69. And it's a really fascinating little mini museum where they show you the heritage of early cheesemaking. They offer tours. They talk about the art of cheesemaking, particularly with Swiss cheese, which was very unique, not unique, but very prevalent in Monroe. And that's why the Swiss colonies headquartered there. And they actually will offer tours of that. And there's even a cheese factory that Jack goes to that, I don't know how to pronounce it, the Emabersteg?
I was glad you took that and didn't put that on me because I was looking at that word like, I don't have the slightest idea how to tackle that.
Probably, yes.
Emabersteg.
That's the one with all of the old equipment and everything?
Right. They basically, this was a cheese factory that ran from 1890 till 1917, and they closed it down just due to economics, and it was shut for 93 years. Just nothing was going on, and they left all the original equipment and everything, and they opened it back up 93 years later in 2010, and now it's a place that you can tour and check out, but the original equipment is still in there, right down to the copper kettles that they preferred to make Swiss cheese with because they felt that copper improved the flavor of Swiss cheese in particular as they would make it and stir it around. And so the guy in the show demonstrates that for Jack and explains the whole science behind that. So that's really fascinating.
Some of the tools that they use for like stirring the kettle and everything were just so crazy. They look like those head massagers, the wire head massagers.
Yeah, with Albert Einstein hairstyles, flying all over the place. Yeah, a lot of those early tools, they look like anything from, you know, simple caveman tools to medieval torture devices. But it's all designed to shape and stir cheese and to allow it to develop into curds and blocks and all that kind of stuff. So it's really cool to see.
Yeah, Jack makes a joke in that segment that I don't know if the person giving him a tour has just heard so many times and didn't respond or didn't catch it. But he's showing him the tool that they use to separate the curds and everything. And Jack says, oh, so that's how they cut the cheese? And the guy doesn't say anything about it. So I think it was just lost.
So funny.
Probably because I used that joke 3 or 4 times already. Yeah.
Jack said it and there was dead silent. I left at home watching it.
Yep.
I have to believe they've heard every cheese pun the planet. That's funny. Either you're into it or you're not.
Yeah. Yep.
You got to watch which way you go with that.
I saw the wheels turning in your head there. I knew one was coming. I was just waiting.
Like, I've got to have a bad dad joke here. Come on.
Yep.
What else we got?
So next up, they go to a town called Plain, which is weird because it's not in the plains of Wisconsin. It's in the Driftless area. Plain is right along Highway 23, a little bit north of Spring Green. Beautiful area. To the Cedar Grove Cheese Factory, and that's where Marie goes. And that's another cheese factory that is small-scale production like so many were back in the day. And that cheese factory dates back over 100 years. And they focus very, very much on sustainability. And obviously for cheese, like for just about anything in production, you need good water and clean water. And they're working on all these machines that help make sure they have access to clean water as well as high-quality cheese. And they have this living machine that she shows Marie that cleans 8,000 pounds of water a day. So that's 4 tons of water. And if you've ever been to a cheese factory, there's water all over the place, splashing through vats, dripping onto the floor. So it's important to recycle that and use it properly, make sure it's all clean. So it's an old cheese factory, but it looks very futuristic in terms of their commitment to sustainability and the environment and making sure that everything is done as gently on Mother Earth as possible while you're making a delicious product.
Yeah, that segment was really fascinating, and I was inspired to go do some more research on how this system works. And it's just so cool that by essentially running all of this water through these hydroponic plants, there are these microbes and insects kind of living in there that clean up all the water that they're using every day, and then they can kind of take the solid food waste that is present in that water, that can settle, they can use that as fertilizer, and then instead of taking that water and kind of spreading it out in the area, they can actually just dump it right back into the nearby creek or whatever he says. Just such a cool system that it seems very futuristic and cutting edge, but he says it's been running for like 20 years.
Hence the name, the living machine too, because living organisms are what clean it. And so, you know, with a good eye on the environment, it's a good thing. And then finally in the episode, they go up around the Marshfield area where very popular, you go to Marshfield, everything is Naysonville cheese in that area. It is, in fact, it's funny because Colby, Wisconsin is right near there, and that's where they invented Colby cheese. But the Naysonville Dairy, they've been around since 1885. And, you know, they're obviously big on supporting local farms. You know, they use all the local milk and everything like that. But they've been around for over, well, now it's what, 135 years? If I do the math correctly. And so it's still a family-owned business, and they sell all kinds of fresh dairy products, not just the cheese that they make. But it's really cool when you go to those places and see all the different things that they can do, just starting with cow milk, and then, you know, not just cheese, but all the other products from whey protein to just everything else. Because once you start with milk and cultures, yogurt and things like that, you can make anything practically. It's crazy.
Do you remember the first time you went to a cheese factory here in Wisconsin, and what surprised you the most?
Well, I was a little kid when I went to the first cheese factory. It was in Mapleton, Wisconsin, where I used to live in Oconomowoc when I was a little kid. And it was called the Bon Brie Cheese Factory. Still remembered very fondly by everybody in Waukesha and Dodge counties. And we used to walk, what I remembered was just how it smelled. Because cheese factories don't always smell great sometimes when you're near the vats. But the cheese we would buy there, you bring it home and it was so good. It was just incredible. And what I do remember, frankly, because cheese factories are very sanitary places.
Yes.
But back then, I remember we would walk past open vats to get to the store in the back. And I think that was a problem eventually. So they made them close that and build a different cheese factory where people didn't have access to the open vats just by walking past.
Yeah.
That's what I remember. But it was really, really, really good cheese. And when we moved away from Wisconsin when I was six for a while, I realized there aren't cheese factories everywhere.
Yeah. Lived that's a Chicago, sad realization.
Lived in Detroit, lived in Dallas. There's no cheese factories nearby. Mm-mm. I was ticked.
I love it. Very cool. Well, I don't think I've been to any of these four that are featured in the show. So I now have four new destinations to add to my Wisconsin bucket list.
And there's exciting. Another good one near Naysonville. If you go north into Rudolph, Wisconsin, where Dick Trickle's from, actually, Dairy State is a place where they make cheese. And that's a very, very popular cheese store, too. So if you're going to go into the Marshfield area or near Wisconsin Rapids in the Wood County area, check out Naysonville. And I would also suggest adding Dairy State to that.
Yeah, that area in particular is pretty fascinating in terms of the agricultural scene, not only for the cheese, but also the cranberries nearby. So if you're really looking to plan a ag-centric weekend getaway, I do think the Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids area does have a lot to offer. I know we've covered quite a bit in that area over the years on some of our shows. All right. I know we say it every week, but if you're enjoying this show, please leave us a review. We love to see them and we want to keep putting out episodes that you guys enjoy. It also helps to ensure that people pay for our podcast. We received a really wonderful review from a woman named Natasha, who said, "I'm currently living outside Wisconsin for the first time in 33 years, and this pod takes me back to so many wonderful memories of my home state." That's awesome. Well, thanks so much, Natasha. Thank you for leaving that review. And, you know, when I first took the job here at Discover Wisconsin, I remember being pleasantly surprised by just how many people would reach out and say they're no longer in Wisconsin, but they tune into our show online or listen to it nowadays, listen to our podcast because they're out of state and are a little bit homesick. And that's always very humbling, I think, to help fill that void for so many people across, not just the Midwest, but across the nation. So very cool.
When I saw that review, she titled it Miss Wisconsin. And at first it took me a while because I was like, oh, wow, we got a celebrity tuning in here. Didn't realize she was saying that she misses Wisconsin.
I probably made that same assumption. We should get Miss Wisconsin on here. Ooh, and Alice in Dairyland.
There we go.
Yeah, I'm on it.
Ideas for post-quarantine.
Yes.
Yeah, let's do those in person, please.
Yeah.
So, lucky number 13. We're Woo-hoo! Wrapping up our 13th episode. And next Tuesday, we'll be back with more of the Cabin Podcast for a lucky number 14, if you will. So you can look forward to a conversation about some of our favorite festivals across the state. We missed so many of them. A lot of them have been postponed or canceled this year, but we're looking forward to their return. I have a feeling no matter when we really start things up again here in 2020, 2021's festivals are going to be just crazy.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be just loving them and attending like never before. Yeah. So we're going to be talking about our favorite festivals and an episode of Discover Wisconsin that covers the heavily Norwegian city of Stoughton.
Mm. Oh, I love it. Today's episode of The Cabin was hosted by me, Mariah Haberman, Eric Paulson, and Dave Janis. Produced by me, Alan Fallon, and Audio Dave. Tune in next week for more campfire conversations and insight into the world of Discover Wisconsin. The Cabin is a production brought to you by Discover Media Works. To learn more, head to discovermediaworks.com and don't forget to leave us a review.
And here's this week's installment of Know Your Wisconsin.
Tyler Deals, a freshman at Beaver Dam High School, spent the better part of his semester learning about pollinators and the plants that attract them. Today, he and his classmates are putting their studies into action by planting a plot on a local farm.
Some pollinators that are hoping to attract include monarch butterflies, bees of every kind, and any insect that uses the pollen from plants and transplanted it onto other plants.
Thanks to a grant from the Sand County Foundation, Beaver Dam's FFA group nurtured native seedlings and is now planting them on Nancy Cavasangian's property.
Certainly farmers need native pollinators, bees, and not honeybees, but the native bees that do the pollination to enhance and to make sure their plants grow. And everybody who has a garden needs the pollinators. So it's very important that we encourage the native pollinators and give them a place that they're safe and that they can eat.
Pollinators are vital to production agriculture. Bees, insects, birds, and other animals that move pollen from one flower to another help fertilize plants and allow them to reproduce. The flower beds also control soil erosion and help filter groundwater.
We actually put these pollinator habitat, we have about 15 acres on five different farms in 3 and 4 5-acre plots. And we established them 5 years ago, so this is the fifth year, under a conservation stewardship program through the USDA.
The seeds being planted today not only benefit Nancy's farm, but nearby gardeners as well. Because it takes time for the native plants to become established, the seedlings that the FFA team raised are going to ensure that this new flower bed is off to a great start.
So for us, pollinators are important because without pollination, you don't get a lot of crops. So for us, it's a win-win, and it looks beautiful too.
And now you know your Wisconsin.